Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining
That's
us.
That's right. Glad you are part of the program. Looking forward to taking your calls on today's show and answering your financial questions. You know, both myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We work with people like yourself during the week. On the weekends, we come to you as your financial advisor on the air. So whether you're listening to us on the radio program via terrestrial broadcast or you listen to us via podcast, glad you're with us. And if you would like to join our program, you've got a call for us. Whether you're listening to podcast or live, call us. We'll schedule a time to take your call because oftentimes we record our show, record our calls during the week.
Yeah, or we'll come in on the weekend and just take tons and tons of calls.
Correct. Much more than
much more than we'll actually use in any one day.
That's right.
Just because we're trying to answer people's questions.
Even right now, if it's when you're hearing this, it's Tuesday at 11:41 in the evening, and you think I do have a question, pick up the phone, call, leave a message,
and we'll
schedule a time.
Yeah.
So to be part of our program, 1-888-2-HANSON, and that's by the way, that's an exciting way to start up a program. All the great things you're going to be talking about, all you're doing is sharing them. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And rather than talk about a bunch of other stuff that I know Pat's got a stack of stuff he wants to talk about, let's take Margie. We're going to start off with a call right off the bat in Roseville, California. Margie, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Margie.
Hey, I listen to you all the time on Sundays and Saturdays when I'm heading to work.
Oh, great. Thank you.
So my question is some of these tax deduction laws with home ownership. We have a rental property, and then we also have a little mortgage here on our primary residence. And I'm just kind of curious how this is going to affect us.
You know, it's interesting, Margie, because a couple of years ago, if someone said, hey, here's my situation, I've got these rentals, I've got this personal residence, we would say, why don't you have the mortgage on your personal residence? Because you're going to get a better tax rate on it instead of the rental.
Yeah.
Now, because of two issues, one is the limitation on state and local taxes is $10,000,
right,
of deductions. Number two is the standard deduction is now $24,000 for a married couple, $12,000 for single. For someone like yourself, might be where in the past it made sense to have a mortgage on the primary residence. Now it might make sense to have the mortgage on a rental property,
which is exactly the opposite of the advice we'd be giving you 2 years ago.
Interesting.
What's your situation?
But there's an offset. Mark. There's an offset there too, Scott, though, which is normally the cost of money is more expensive on a rental home than it is on a primary residence.
But we're looking at net.
But you're looking at the net number.
Yeah. So what's your? Yes.
Unfortunately, we don't have much retirement. We lost our businesses when the economy tanked.
Ouch.
And we were just barely able to start back up from scratch, and now we're back up there. Financially, at least fiscally, but I just don't know if, you know, should we pay off the rental or do we start working on this mortgage on our primary? And I want to be like well invested because now we've lost all of our old retirement.
Yeah. And the first kind of concern I have is I want to make sure that you guys are in a position so if we have another major downturn, you're not thrown back into the situation that you were in last time.
Which means you should have cash on hand, and you might be better off with a bigger cash margin, especially if you're still self-employed.
Are you and your husband still self-employed?
No, we're actually both working for people now, which is kind of funny. Okay. Never thought that would happen.
All right.
Well, you've got a great spirit about you.
Yeah, though. Well, what are you going to do, right? Yeah, just move on with whatever comes, I guess.
Yeah, you can't sit and dwell on it.
No. So what's your primary mortgage, I mean, your primary home worth?
Well, it actually is a cash-out refi. We just did it. So we do have a bunch of liquid cash now. Really looking for more investment purposes.
Okay, let's stop here for a second. What's the value of the home?
The primary is probably about $650.
And how much do you owe on it? Whether you took it out for cash or whatever, how much do you owe on it?
$250.
And what's the interest rate?
Like five.
And when did you take the money? Did you take all $250 recently?
Recently, mm-hmm.
And what? Well, you're probably not getting any tax deduction on this because of the limitations.
Yep.
Exactly.
What was the idea of taking the $250? What were you going to do with it?
Well, we do need the house is a fixer-upper, so okay. We definitely need to reinvest in the house and, okay. You know, have that 6 months liquid put away.
Okay.
If something were to happen, and okay. Also looking into some investment properties as well.
Okay, and tell us about the rental property. What's the value of the rental property?
It's close to four now.
And what do you?
And we owe about $160 on it.
And what's the interest rate?
4.25.
Okay. And how much money it would on that first mortgage on or the cash out refi on your primary residence did you plan on putting into investment properties?
About $100.
Okay. And what other assets are there? Do you have any money in 401ks, IRAs, money in the bank, anything like that?
You know, not too much. Okay. A lot of that got liquefied.
All right.
Probably under $50.
Okay. So I don't like the idea at all of buying investment properties with that $100,000 borrowed.
Okay.
It was $250 you borrowed, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they were going to use $50 of it for cash reserves and $100,000 to go
into. What you're doing is just you're leveraging your house, and then you're going to go buy a property
and leverage,
highly leveraged again.
And leverage that again. And that's why we're not fond of that. I get taking $150,000 out of your home and putting $100,000, which is the math that I did when you were answering the questions, into rehabbing the home and improving the value of the home by putting the $100,000 in and then keeping $50,000 in reserve in cash in case anything happens. And that's a cost of, you know, of security. I would have used more money out of the rental property than you did.
It was tricky to do that, though. It was the high interest rate was off the charts by pulling money out of the rental.
Perfect. You have all the right answers. That's right. So assuming everything else being equal, you would have done it there, but you did the math.
And do you guys both have 401ks available through your employer?
Well, my husband has a nice little pension that'll probably cover our medical when we're older.
Oh.
But
do you have a 401k available through work?
No, I do not. Not this time.
Does your husband?
I don't know. Not this time.
He doesn't work for a state or county or anything like that.
He's a union carpenter.
Okay, he does probably have one.
Yeah.
He probably does have a pension.
Then he's got a
He probably has what they call a defined contribution plan that you should be putting money into. And you should be
annuity
putting
annuity or something.
It's a
group annuity. It's not like the annuities we rallied.
So he most likely has a defined contribution plan that he could put money into based upon his hourly rate, and the number of hours he works.
And have you guys contributed to a Roth IRAs at all in the past?
I have. Yeah. I have maybe 30.
Okay, good.
All right, good.
So you want to do all that stuff to the maximum.
Sounds like you've been paying attention and doing
this. You've done you want to do all of that stuff to the maximum. I would take that extra $100,000 that you were going to put into a property, and unless it was a fixer-upper and you and your husband were going to do all the sweat equity into that, then I could probably see
he's a carpenter.
He is. That's why that was what. Yeah.
And well, did I mention he's a carpenter?
Yeah, you did. That's what I just said.
He what?
It took me 2.5 years to get baseboards.
Oh,
and my husband's a carpenter.
Well, the cobbler's kids always go barefoot, right? I mean,
so if he's going to do an improvement, you know, the Chip and Jill sort of thing, and improve the house. Then it may make sense to make the investment. Otherwise, if you're just going to buy either raw property or a house and use leverage on it with leverage to get to the leverage, I discourage that, because all you're doing is setting yourself up in a risk scenario that was probably very similar to what you went through last time.
And furthermore, I can't predict when markets start and, you know, cycles start and end. Mm-hmm. But it's been a long run in the real estate cycle, and there's a lot of headwinds on it. And it's fine if someone's saying, I'm buying something, I'm going to hold it for the next 30 years, and I don't have any debt on it. Who cares? But if you're using leverage, number one, so your leverage, which means that when you have the price goes up, you're going to have a greater percentage increase. When price goes down, you'll have a greater percentage of loss. But secondly, when you're dependent upon some other renter paying the mortgage payment,
and you work in an industry
that's already dependent upon the trades.
It's risk upon risk upon risk, and it's not worth taking the risk. Diversify away from that into something like a Roth IRA, company 401k, union group annuity contract, mm-hmm. not the same annuities that we rail on this show, completely different animal, just same name, and put the maximum into there and start building wealth that way. So appreciate the call. Thanks for
Sounds like you're making a lot of the right moves, though. And you know, I got to tell you, Pat, I heard the ad a couple weeks ago on the radio of untapping the equity in your home, untapping it. Like, and he's talked about how it's just not doing anything for people. And I think that's insane. I guess I also drove by the other day and I said title loans. I mean, what the heck's a title loan? And I thought, oh, it's title on your car.
Yeah. You don't have one?
No, I don't. I don't. Prudent financial moves.
But actually, so they call title loans, but people that actually finance their cars to purchase them, it's a title loan.
I know, but there's a difference when you're...
When you're going to them after you buy and actually doing that. Yes.
Same thing with house. People who were foreclosed upon during the last downturn were people that had lots of debt on their homes.
Yes.
I don't know of one individual who lost a home that had no mortgage on it.
Well, you know, one of the things, Scott, that kind of tells you we might be long in this market in real estate is the fact that mortgage companies are now back doing unconventional mortgages, which are...
I know.
Which are...
I saw that.
They used to call them the liar loans.
You can't prove your income.
You can't prove your income. Which, by the way, if you think about it, if you can't prove your income by looking at a tax return, aren't you committing tax fraud?
Because income needs to be reported.
If income needs to be reported. And if you can't prove it by showing a tax return, isn't that tax fraud? And if you're overstating your income because it's too low to get the loan, aren't you committing bank fraud?
So either way,
pick your poison. Which always confused me the last time around, which is if you can't really show your income, you're committing one or two frauds. They're back. They're back with a vengeance.
So, Pat, one could say, look, I made $100,000 last year in my business. It's February of 2019. My tax return's not going to get done until August, September. So, therefore, I can't prove my income last year.
Or print out a QuickBooks documentation that actually shows what my gross and net is.
Let's continue with calls. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's talk with John. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello, how's it going?
Great, John. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
How can we help?
Get to my question. About a little over a year ago, my sister passed away and left me and my siblings some assets that were alternative assets in an IRA custodial account.
Okay.
So about a year ago, one asset has been liquidated and got rid of, but one is still in there. About a year ago, the shares of this fund, which is an LLC, were re-registered to us individually. Well, the cost of keeping this account open is about $90 a quarter, so $360 bucks a year. And the value of this asset is essentially worthless. So I requested that they liquidate the asset or transfer it to my name, and I'd pay the taxes on it, whatever.
Which would be zero.
And close the account.
They told you. They said, okay,
they charged me the fees to close the account, which is like $300 bucks. And then they said, okay, so we started this process. You get no more fees, et cetera. Well, I get a letter from them saying that they've been unable to contact the asset sponsor and get the shares re-registered to me personally.
Okay.
And if they don't hear anything within 30 days, they're going to reopen the account and start reassessing.
Nah, just tell them to abandon the just tell them to abandon.
That's what I told them, and they said, you can't do that.
You certainly can.
Okay, how do I do it?
You just tell them to close the account.
Well, I no longer want you to act as my trustee here, my custodian here. Thank you very much.
And that's all you need to do.
And I release you of any liability. If you require a separate form stating I release you of liability, please send it. Otherwise, I'm not paying you a dime.
And then technically, then the plan, the alternative asset. By the way, for the rest of these listeners, I'm just going to guess this is a non-traded real estate investment trust. Or a
that's
oil.
Exactly what it is.
I'm just guessing.
That's exactly.
Because I've
you
only
know
been
we
doing this job.
About, we don't like non-traded real estate investment trust. This is
because
yeah.
Well, we've only been doing
that,
this for
the guys that saw the guys that got my sister to invest in it got sentenced to 25 years in prison for investment fraud.
You know what the problem with that is?
Oh, even worse.
It wasn't long enough. That was what the problem.
That was a real fraud issue. Not
that
just
was
a,
yeah. That was above and beyond a non-traded. So all you need to tell the custodian is you are no longer going to service this account at all. I will release you of any liability. Send me the paperwork. They're billing you. If you actually, you're worried about your credit, I assume, in this thing. If you tell them that you're not going to pay them anymore and you keep the documentation, they're not going to bill you. And then you just say, release it. Then they go back to, you go back to the plant, the REIT, non-traded REIT, and say, I am the individual owner on this. And just
the non-traded REIT, it might
not even exist anymore.
It might be doing nobody's doing anything on it.
Yeah, so the website for the REIT is down.
Yeah, you're done. So
the office is
hilarious. This company, you know, our industry earns our reputation.
Yeah, you've got a custodial issue.
That's unbelievable.
Just tell them to, you know.
Now, for other listeners, or in case you have something like this again, you did have an option to disclaim your inheritance there.
I was thinking about that, Scott, but if it was all one IRA
and there was
two assets in it.
I understand that.
You can't.
Yeah, well, the other one was not. The other one was turned out to be like $60,000.
Yeah, so that would have been foolish to disclaim there.
Yeah. Yes. If there was only one asset and you were named and it was worthless or close to worthless.
But in all sincerity, be careful because sometimes you'll see someone has something like this. They bought something weird. And the typical custodian won't hold it, so they find some independent one that charges $90 a quarter or whatever it is. And if it's worthless and you're the beneficiary, you don't have to. You can say, I'm not going to accept that one.
You don't have to. You're just like, I don't want it.
Yeah.
Oh, good to know.
Yep.
So, anyway, so that's what you want to do, and they're going to fight with you, the custodian. And you know why they're going to fight with you? You have a lot in common with them.
$90.
Well, you both have a lot in common. They both want your money. You want it, they want it. So just tell them no.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
I already
call.
Removed my credit card and checking account. So.
Oh, perfect.
They're gonna give
there
up.
There you go. They'll give up.
Can't imagine. Can you imagine trying to collect on that debt?
Yeah. So you know, my dad was ill, died, you know, late last year, but he was ill for many, many years, and some company was sending him vitamins delivered to the nursing care I was unaware of. And he racked up there was vitamins. They were charging him like $8 or $10 for a vitamin. And they racked up this bill that was $6,000.
No way.
Telling you. And then my dad, right, when he was ill, they called me and said, you need to pay this. I said, actually, I don't.
You proved to me that he was in right mind when he...
Not only that. I have no legal responsibility to pay my dad's bills if he doesn't have the assets to do it.
Well, it's not like
I'm
you inherited anything.
Yeah.
That's true. Even if you have, there was nothing to inherit, right?
So I said to him, look, there's nothing here. And they said, well, you're in a lot of trouble, Pat. You're going to have to pay this. And I said,
oh, that's just wicked.
You're going to have to bring me to court and prove that I owe this. And I said, it's your business,
you know,
model.
It's one thing. Here you're an astute financial advisor. You understand this stuff pretty well.
Correct.
Right?
That isn't
but it. Someone else grieving over a family loss.
They're worried about it. Yeah. And I said to him, it was your business model to overcharge for this and then write off part of it because you overcharge for it. That was your business model. Doesn't mean I have to agree with your business model and play along.
I don't think the person on the collection end even probably didn't quite fit, understand.
Well, I guess that's actually probably a good point.
All right, 1-888-2 Hanson to join us here at Money Matters. Scott Hanson and Pat McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's talk with Robert in Northern California. Robert, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Robert.
Hey, I got a question about annuity. I was told that annuity is better than whatever.
Okay.
And it might be better than some things, but yeah.
Right, right. So, you know, my question is that what would be better, and then if I can take my funds out of that annuity and take it somewhere to where I can get my my loss.
Okay, so let's start with this. Did you already buy the annuity, or is it being pitched to you?
Well, it was pitched to me, and I bought it.
How long ago?
This last June, or no, okay. Sorry, about August.
So, anyway, you had, is it 30 or 60 days, Scott?
Sometimes it's a free look. You can change your mind.
I think it's 30 days or 10 days or something. Mm-hmm. You've got a free look, but you're past that free look period.
Yes.
So,
where'd the money come from that you put in the annuity?
I took it out of my 401k.
Okay, so it was an IRA annuity.
Mm-hmm.
And how much money did you put in it?
All of it.
How much is all of it?
About 400.
Okay.
400K.
And is it a, do you happen to know what kind of annuity? Is it a variable annuity? Are there like mutual fund type options?
It was an AIG annuity.
Does it say index annuity on it?
Does the value fluctuate at all, or does it stay exactly the same?
It fluctuates as time goes on.
Okay, so
Was it down?
It was up 2 years.
Did it look like it lost value in December when you got a December statement?
No, sir.
Okay.
It actually to stay to zero.
Got it. You have an index annuity.
How many years are there for the surrender charges on this?
About 10 years.
Okay.
Oh, good night.
So there's, you can start, first of all, there were many, 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 many things better than this annuity. Many things.
How old are you?
I'm about 57 years old.
There should be laws to take 100% of someone's retirement account and put it in one index annuity.
So
you know what I mean, Pat?
Scott, I mean, what's the point of even talking about this? He is in it. He's in it.
Right.
Robert's in it. So you're gonna start an unwinding process
this. How were you invested before?
My 401k.
Yeah, but how is it invested? You know,
stocks and bonds and mutual funds.
Yes, it was like an aggressive what they call it, C fund from TSP.
Oh, you had a thrift savings plan. You're a federal employee.
Yeah.
I hate to say it.
Go back at him.
I would say this was an unsuitable investment for you.
I think so as well. I think so as well.
I don't know what age elder abuse starts. Is it 60 or is it 55?
I don't know, but most certainly would argue that this was unsuitable, that you went from a C, which is a relatively
stock
aggressive
stock market fund, I think, isn't it?
And right.
S&P 500,
which is
at a 57-year-old, and they took 100% of it and put it in an equity index annuity. There's not a chance in the world you can have your return on this is going to be anywhere close to what that C fund
over
is going to do in the next
period.
10 or 20-year period.
Yeah.
10 years they locked your money up.
When they talked about how there's no market volatility, look, in a 10-year period, you're going to get through most market swings over a 10-year period. So there's the problem with this is that unwinding it is very, very difficult because oftentimes they do have some market participation unless you take withdrawals from it, in which case it nullifies the market participation.
I'm not even sure. Let's say it's a 10. Do you know what your percentage, surrender fee they would have?
I'm not sure. As time goes on, like I said, it fluctuates on the percentage that I would get.
Got it. Okay.
Let me ask you this. The person who recommended this to you, had they had a lot of experience in financial industry, 10, 20 years?
No, sir.
How do you know that person?
Family friend.
Not anymore.
I want you, you know what?
I want you to get an attorney.
I do too.
I would go to an attorney.
Yep. Yep.
You can
yep.
come to our office and we'll sit down for free and try to help you unwrap
but there's
it.
Not,
but there's almost nothing
this,
we can
they
do.
Shouldn't, this was an unsuitable recommendation.
Yeah. And AIG may reverse this thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. So I would
at Google, least for a portion of it.
I would Google or Bing annuity.
And by the way, your
fraud,
friend got paid. What do you think the commission was on? $400,000?
$30,000?
10%?
$40,000? Somewhere in there?
Yeah, $40,000.
Is that what they said they got?
Yeah, well, I let's say $40,000. I'm not sure.
Yeah, maybe that's probably about, probably about anywhere $30,000 to $40,000. So you want to Google, find an attorney that.
They took 100% of your thrift savings plan, which is very low fees, that was in the stock market for a 50. You're not, you're 57. You have a long time ahead of you, and put you in something that there's no, you're never going to get close to that kind of return. So I think, Robert, your best bet, and get something like you had before, which you can.
This is a big enough account that an attorney will take it.
I tell you what, this is why we hate annuities. Not that there's never a use for any of them.
Look, there is a rare case that annuities make sense.
And an immediate annuity sometimes makes sense.
But
this sort of stuff,
the average consumer can't tell the difference between good and bad.
Look, that's two calls people are getting scammed in this. All right, we're taking a quick break. You're listening to Scott Hansen and Pat McClain. Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hansen McClain's Money Matters? Visit HansenMcClain.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hansen McClain's Money Matters. Scott Hansen here.
Pat McClain.
And by the way, I said Hansen McClain's Money Matters. So Scott and I... Pat and I started Hansen McClain July or August of 1993. Long time ago.
Okay.
Almost 26 years ago.
I'm going to go with that.
We chose the name Hansen McClain.
How did we do this?
Well, we were both... I was 26. My acne hadn't quite cleared up.
Yeah. I think I was... What? I was 30? 29, 30? Yeah,
but we're both very young to be talking about someone's life savings. So we thought, why don't we have, let's call a firm after ourselves. We'll have our name on the door. That way it gives us a little bit of credibility. Well, I know this guy's kid's young, but man, he must be
doing
something.
Do you remember why it turned out to be Hansen McClain and not McClain Hansen?
I believe we looked at IQ results and I don't.
Do you remember?
No.
We flipped a coin. It was going to be Hansen McClain.
So much for the luck of the
Irish. Or McClain Hansen, and we flipped the coin. But there were two different size offices in our office.
Took the bigger office.
And whoever lost that, their name was second, and we got the bigger office.
Yeah. So we named it a Hansen McClain in large part because of that at the time. It's like, what's going to give us the most chance of survival as a fledging new company?
Put our name on it.
Right? Fast forward to 2019.
And back then, there was you, myself, and... One employee.
Today we have roughly 120 employees, give or take. 34 advisors, give or take, somewhere in there.
In 4 or 5 states that we have offices.
Physical offices. We've got clients in every state. And so we start going through the time of like, we have plans to continue to grow. In large part because of calls like we just had.
Yeah, the guy that got ripped off, a family friend with an
annuity. Just didn't know better. I bet he wasn't a bad guy. Didn't know better.
Maybe. Probably. You're right.
Probably. So that's why I asked how long that person been.
We have been known as Hansen McClain for all these years. This company's going to, I every intention that it's going to live past my lifetime.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? That's what you're building. Right? First of all, the clients deserve it. That we're there forever to serve them. That's the reality.
So
in that light,
we are in the process of changing our names.
Drum roll, please.
From Hansen McClain.
Drum roll.
To Allworth Financial.
Allworth. A-L-L.
Now, it wouldn't matter whatever name we came up with.
There'd be some percentage
like,
of the
population. Wait a minute.
Your wife didn't even like the name, right?
But she came back to me later and said, I really don't think you should change the name.
Okay. <you're> like, but it's Allworth. A-L-L-W-O-R-T-H. Allworth. Why Allworth, Scott?
Well, I think a variety. One, we wanted a name that wasn't tied to us, to this person of Scott Hansen and Pat McClain.
And first, we don't have any intentions of going anywhere, so this isn't like, oh, we're just going to do this so we
no,
can
no,
exit.
No, 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 no.
In fact, exactly the opposite.
Matter of fact, I mean,
I'm
we just
more fun now than I've had in years.
I mean, in the last 12 months, we have merged or acquired a firm in Cincinnati, a tax firm. We just finished a deal with a firm in Napa.
Yep.
And we're close to $4 billion under management.
It's growing.
6,000 households. We want to continue to grow.
So Allworth, it better represents what we think we do for our clients, which is to serve all of their worth. Hence the tax services, the referrals to attorneys for estate planning. We plan on adding
more medical services, all their other issues dealing with in retirement.
We plan on adding more and more services that our clients are asking for, and we're working on adding those services for our clients in the coming years.
Allworth Financial.
That's I like it. Coming.
And if you want, if you've got more questions about this, you can go to hansenmcclain.com/Allworth, and there's a Q&A there, or go to the website, allworthfinancial.com. It's a little microsite right now because we're not officially changed, but it'll give you an idea of the kind of the brand we're coming. So we are not going anywhere. We're going to continue just doing this radio program until the radios kick us off, but we have, I think, more listeners via podcast now. So as long as iTunes continues to carry us, I think we'll be fine there. Unless Tim Cook wants to kick us off, then we're going to have a problem. All right.
I don't think Tim Cook knows who we are.
I'm pretty confident Tim Cook does not know who we are.
Right. Yeah. But we know who he is.
And I'm confident there's a number of listeners that don't know who Tim Cook is at this moment either, which is fine.
Okay. Let's take
calls. He replaced Steve Jobs. He didn't replace Steve. He replaced Steve's seat at Apple.
Yes.
1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of our program. 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's go to Indiana and talk with Marissa. Marissa, you're with Hansen McClain.
Yes, I had a question to ask. I was at a seminar recently, and they were talking about, this is a retirement seminar, they were talking about annuities and different things for retirement. And the annuity they were talking about was the fixed index annuity, and we would have some in the annuity, some in the stocks and bonds that are not the risky ones, and then be able to draw on that money. For the money we have left.
Got it. So, I have a quick question for you. How was dinner?
Dinner?
Yeah, did they serve you a big steak dinner, right?
Actually, I had a pork chop. Yes.
I'm just curious.
It was very good.
I actually know some people that attend these workshops that are clients of our firm on a regular basis. And I said, why? And they said, because there's great dinners. I said,
What percentage of your portfolio were they recommending go into an annuity, and what percentage would be out held in some other type of more traditional investments?
Well, you've got me on that. Yeah. And I tried to follow as close as I could. We have my husband and I are 76 and 77. We do not have pensions. Just what we could save and our Social Security. So what we needed was something to make sure the money continues so that we can add to our monthly income.
How much money do you have that you were thinking of investing with this?
What do you have in savings, investments, or whatever that you would?
Let's see, we have in savings right now, we have $60,000. We have some I bonds that are still, I think they're about $20,000. And then we have about $600,000 that we were going to invest and do annuity and everything.
Where's the $600,000 now?
Where's it invested, and is it inside of an IRA or outside of an IRA?
We just have stocks and things right now. No, it's not in an IRA. No.
And are you taking any income? So,
yeah. So are you taking income from that $600,000? Like. $2,000 or $3,000 a month. How much are you taking a month?
I'd say we probably need, depending on the month, average $1,500 to $2,000.
Okay. So if you're taking $2,000 a month out, that's $24,000 a year, which is a 4% distribution on your $600,000. Assuming that you are invested even in a portfolio of 50% stocks, either consisting of stocks or mutual funds or index funds, and 50% bonds and cash, that 4% distribution should be easy. But I think that there's two things that are going on here. One is the mechanics of how you're taking the monthly distribution. So you said some months you take $1,500, some months you take $2,000. What I would like you to do, if you were my clients, I would set up a fixed amount, and actually it'd be higher than $2,000 a month at your age 77. I'd probably do a distribution of $2,500 to $3,000 a month out of the $600,000. $25,000 a month would be $30,000 a year, or 5% distribution at age 77. I'd be 100% fine with that. I would set it up to go on a monthly distribution automatically to hit your account at the same time every month so that you're not deciding whether you should take the money or not taking the money. Essentially turning this into a stream of income of what you're thinking you're going to achieve with the purchase of an annuity. The purchase of the annuity has all kinds of problems surrounding it. One is that these dollars are after-tax dollars, or $600,000 after-tax dollars.
They're not after-tax. So you would have to liquidate things. There'd be some capital gain implications.
All the way out.
So right. even to liquidate your existing portfolio, you've got tax considerations.
You might drop the value of this by paying taxes on it from, who knows, $600,000 to $500,000.
Secondly, you're taking you've got income that's either qualified dividends or capital gain distributions, some mutual funds. You're going to turn that favorable tax into taxes at ordinary income from annuities,
which is unfavorable for you. You have what would be considered. I'd have an advisor look at this portfolio to make sure the risk is correct, that we have a well-balanced risk-based portfolio, and rebalance if need be, with the idea that tax implications are paramount. Annuity, you have no reason for this thing.
And you've been retired quite a few years now, correct?
Yes, uh-huh.
And you've been through...
Actually, my husband didn't retire until he was 70, because we didn't have pensions or anything.
So I can appreciate your... I mean, you probably look at the recent stock market volatility and think, you know, we went through this downturn before. My husband was still working. We survived that one. We might not be able to survive another one, right?
But you will.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that you need to take what you've done and throw it all away and go into some product with an insurance company that does, your money's going to be locked up
for 8, 10, 12, 15 years. Who knows?
The insurance company operates in the exact same environment we all do. So they take your money. They got to go out and invest it.
What do they do with it? They actually, if it's an index annuity, they're investing in bonds and buying options on an underlying index, which you can do. I can do. We don't need an insurance company to do it. We don't need to eat a free pork chop in order to get to...
We're not huge fans of equity.
Scott. We're not. Forget that. You're sugarcoating. This thing would be terrible for you. It's an absolute piece of garbage.
Particularly for the whole thing.
77 years of age.
No, I would be angry if you called and said, you're right, I'm sugarcoating. Only because of a previous call, we had something similar.
We had the previous call that invested $450,000.
Here is a type of annuity that actually, if you've got some concern, that could be a benefit, and only for a minority of your portfolio.
Small amount.
An immediate annuity. And that's where you're like buying a pension. You give the insurance company a chunk of cash in exchange for a payment that will pay for as long as you and your husband are alive. And as you get older, because the longer we live, the shorter our life expectancy is. I hate to say it. But because of that, the kind of the monthly return per dollar gets pretty attractive if we're concerned about fixed monthly income.
But you are giving up the principal for life, which
forever
means it will not be going to any of your heirs.
That is correct.
So, quite frankly, I mean, these dollars you saved and invested over the years, correctly? They weren't inherited.
Right.
So you've been through the markets.
If anything, meet with an independent financial advisor, one who's a certified financial planner.
and one who is a fiduciary, not a commission salesperson.
Someone who does not sell annuities.
But this index annuity thing would be awful.
They're good at, I mean, they're great presentations, and they talk about all the benefits, right? I mean, you know, it's funny. We have continuing education in our industry, like most professional industries, continuing education. And one of the classes I had to do this last year was on, it was exactly on this, sales. It was sales pitches on annuities to seniors. And they talked about the dinner seminars, right? You probably take the same class,
the
right?
Same one.
Dinner seminars, pitched it, and they talked about, all they do is they talk about the things that are great, because it was.
Anyway, thank you for calling the show before you bought this.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, really.
Had you called after you bought this, which happened earlier in the show,
someone been in trouble.
Well, here's what, you know what I've seen? You do this, something happens, one of you has a health issue, something's going, right? Something out of the blue happens, you want a big chunk of cash, too bad. And they say, oh, well, no, you can get if you're in a nursing home. But there's often restrictions there. And the way the returns work internally, most of the time you have to have your money left there for the entire length of the contract, 10 years, to get the ultimate returns. Otherwise, you end up having some penalties. They're not called penalties, but they are penalties.
So, as always, we will offer to the annuity salespeople out there, if you wish to argue your point as to why these index annuities are good, call our show. We would love to have you on the air.
If you were the one that served up the fabulous pork dinner to Marissa here, and would like to say why we are wrong and why your recommendation is right and why it makes sense, we would love to have that discussion as well.
I would like you, as an annuity salesman, making big fat commissions off of people.
Or fair compensation. Let's call it that, Pat.
Okay.
To let them feel better.
Whatever the word fair means, I would welcome you onto our show to discuss the merits of your crappy little product.
It's not a very warm, inviting welcome. But in all sincerity,
it's a welcome.
Yeah. Anyway, good luck to you, Marissa. And the fact is, we understand how these products work. And we see the challenges. We see when people come in here.
We saw the retiree that came in with $1.8 million in indexed annuities from 11 different contracts sold by the same company that we're trying to help. And I say trying.
No, I mean, we have lots of people that have come to us, Pat. Now you're talking about someone who's got, like, well, maybe they can afford to make mistakes. People that on more modest incomes,
50,
where everything's in the annuity, and suddenly they realize, wait a minute, by the time I'm taking this income, because I needed 5% of the income a month, and they said it's a 10% free withdrawal, but now I realize 10 years from now, the base in which they're going to credit me the excess return is going to be half what I invested, even if the stock market's up 40% a year. I'm not going to have more than...
And remember, they don't actually include dividends in the indexes. And dividends...
There's all kinds of,
dividends stock investments can be a substantial part of the return.
It's not just that. You don't receive all of the... There's all kinds of...
It's garbage.
Yeah. It's one of those things I'm like, why do the regulators allow this?
Well, why do they actually...
It's the insurance lobby.
People-
and furthermore... And someone can sell an equity index annuity without being securities licensed.
That's where I was going to go. Why do they allow life insurance agents to sell a product that is a security derivative?
Look, I wouldn't be allowed to go out and sell car insurance tomorrow, property and cat, homeowners insurance. I don't know anything about it. I have to be licensed.
Yeah. Well, you know something about it. You just don't have the license.
Okay. But I'm not
you
that
much.
You
could sell car insurance tomorrow. You know enough about it. But you don't have a license.
I only know what I think I know.
Good.
And if I went to a week-long class, I would learn whatever they taught me. That's how equity index annuities are sold. Someone goes, they have some other profession. They say, oh, I think I'll start going to the financial services. They take a week-long course. They get an insurance license.
And then they sell a securities product.
Because somehow the insurance industry has enabled to have this product not qualified as a security.
Even though that a part of its return is derived from a security, which would be a put off.
And the kind that they pitch.
Correct. All right, let's, Scott, can we take another call?
All right, 1-888.
This twice, but at least this lady didn't buy it.
If this next call is about an annuity, we're hanging out.
That's it.
1-888-2-HANSON is the number here. 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's talk to Melanie in Northern California. Melanie, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi there.
Hi, Melanie.
Who was sick? Someone was sick.
Oh, Oh, that was Scott. Me. That was Scott. That was
I'm
Scott.
Better.
Oh, yeah, I hope you're feeling better. I'm still sick. I have not gotten better.
Sorry to hear that.
There's the cold from Hades going around.
I mean, exactly, like
the worst cold, and I had relapse.
Okay, so what can we do for you?
So my two boys, who are 10 and 12, I am their rep payee for benefits. Their dad passed away 3 years ago, and so we get benefits that I quite honestly was rather shocked that they would be receiving. And as the accounts are getting bigger and bigger,
I assume that you're talking about Social Security survivor benefit to your two minor children.
And they call it a rep
payee. For the rest of the listeners, when Melanie's when the father of Melanie's children passed away, the children were entitled to a survivor benefit.
And how much?
It's probably, how much, $1,200, $1,500
a month? No, $1,500 each a month. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really shocked.
Okay, so what's your question for
right.
us?
So I'm happy for you, and when I look at the Social Security situation, we're like, so you're getting $3,000 a month. So, probably more than you were getting in spousal support, child support.
Well, assuming,
So
this was a divorced spouse.
So we were not officially divorced, but it would have eventually gone down that road. But
How old are you, Melanie?
I am 44.
Okay, so what's your question for us?
So as this money is adding up, I keep having people, obviously the bank's like, hey, put this here, put this there, And I know that there's a lot of options out there, but it's in my mind, this is not my money. This is my children's money.
It is your money.
But I really look at it as
Melanie.
It's
your money.
Well, to spend upon their support.
I assume they're not living at your house for free. I assume that they are not these magical children that don't consume anything.
So they consume a lot.
What's your family income now?
So I am a single parent and I probably make, roughly between, 59 and I would say 70. I'm sales.
Got it.
So Melanie, we want you to feel comfortable, not more than that for taking some of these dollars, some or all these dollars and having them into the family home. Okay.
How much of that?
I do.
Do you not feel guilty about that?
So when they were in childcare after school, that did help because that was disgustingly overpriced. It was $1,400 a month for childcare for two kids where I live. And so now I only do it when baseball season's coming up. So that's going to cost me $600
to sign them up. Melanie, all of this is in your head that it's their money. All right? It's in your head. Because the money was there is a benefit to be paid to you on behalf of support of the children. It's in your head. Everything that you're going to give these kids, raising them, the stuff of value, you will not be able to count. Right?
Right.
Moral, ethics,
of course.
Work code, just work ethics.
Loving mom.
Right. You're going to be the best you can. If you need to spend some of this in order to support that mission, it's more important than taking these dollars and putting them aside for these kids to.
So they have a huge chunk of cash when they turn 18.
And that's not what my plan is. My first two goals are this. So, A, my children are going to go to college or a trade school, and it will be very nice for me when my kid says, "Hey, mom, I'm going to go to Sac State." I get to write a check and not have
Agree with that.
Got it.
Right. Worthy, very worthy goal.
And then should one of them want to go to trade school, or let's say they don't go to school at all and, you know, they get through and who knows does what, then it will be put aside someday for hopefully they can invest in a home. Like I'm not going to just give my kids money.
Here's what I would do with these dollars.
How much do you have saved thus far?
So I'm probably right now roughly at about $50,000 each in their accounts.
Okay.
So I have used, I mean, don't get me wrong. I've used it for little tiny things here and there, but very minimal.
Here's what I would do with the money.
How old are your boys?
They're 10 and 12.
Okay.
10 and 12.
Good kids? No, seriously, good kids? I mean,
they don't change much, by the way.
But yeah, they get good grades. They're respectful. Good kids, right?
Yes, okay. Very much so.
No, listen, Scott's right. I mean, look, I raised four of my own. Scott's got four. They don't change a lot. They don't, you know, and it doesn't make it good or bad. Some have an aptitude that is different than others. So I would start funding a 529 plan.
Yes.
I'd probably use the state of Utah's plan or the state of California's plan. I would put it in an aggressive age weighted.
State of California's gonna be fine. Simple.
Good enough. I would take $10,000 of this $50,000 and I'd put it in your savings account just as a backup. I'd take $20,000 each for each of them and I put it in the same in different accounts on an age weighted aggressive growth. Okay. Then I would add $10,000 a year to it, and I'd spend the other $10,000 on the kids.
Okay.
Something here's. I'm going to back up because I think if you worked backwards, like what's it going to take for their college? What's it going to take college or home? And think what would those goals be? Then work backwards to today and say, okay, of the $1,500 a month, $800 of that needs to be saved for hitting those goals. Let's take the other $600, $700. Let's throw it into the family checkbook to pay for going to Red Robin after the baseball games and all those other things, all those expenses that just keep getting at. And if you think it's expensive, right. 10 and 12, wait till 16 and 18. Right?
Don't not let them play lacrosse.
No, it already is. My 12-year-old is already in small men's, so he's a very large 12-year-old, okay. Tall-wise. So
not
I
my
get
kid,
it.
I tell you that much.
So what you want to do is kind of work backwards, and you want to use the 529 is a funding vehicle for either trade school or secondary education. And you absolutely want to stay away from the people at the bank that, you know, they dress like weathermen or weather women. They sit in the corner. They point at big charts. They smile a lot.
Right.
You did the right thing. And you don't need an advisor.
Start with the 520. Just Google California 529 plan and determine how much of this you want to put in there. Put it in there.
And then take a third.
And it might not be a bad idea to meet with a financial advisor or an accountant.
Someone that pays by the hour.
And say,
or whatever.
Here's what my objectives are. Can you help me figure out how much of this each month I need to have saved?
And I assume you're putting the maximum in your 401k.
Anyway, Melanie, it's glad you're. I mean, it's really nice you've got this kind of planning for the kids. So we wish you nothing but success. We are about out of time. Want to remind, we just talked earlier that Hanson McLean will be becoming Allworth. We are still very much available for meeting with clients, and we'd love to. Yeah, if it was planned for 2019, we're in February now.
If you were planning on fixing your retirement finances,
visit HansonMcLean.com if you want to schedule a meeting with one of our advisors, or call 1-888-2-HANSON to schedule a meeting with one of our advisors. We will see you next week. This has been Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.